The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
We have the Secretary of Education of Arkansas going to be on with us, Secretary Oliva. He's going to join us. We got about 15 minutes with him. We wanted to spend that time talking about one specific issue, and that is what are the questions that are out there dealing with the private schools about the LEARNS Act. And, Secretary, thanks for being with us here on the Dave Elswick Show today.
Good morning, Dave. Thanks for having me. I got to tell you, your Elswick hype music coming back from break got me all fired up. I'm going to see if you can make me a song to get me going in the morning.
Everybody likes that. They enjoy that we use a little thunderstruck to bring them into the show each hour. Hey, let's move right into this discussion because we don't have a lot of time. And that is the private schools and how does the LEARNS Act affect them? There's a lot of, I think, misinformation that's rolling around out there. Why don't you bring us up to date on all of that?
Sure, that'd be great. And I appreciate the opportunity. And first and foremost, as we talk about the LEARNS bill, I've been traveling the great state of Arkansas. In fact, I did over 5,000 miles on the road last month alone.
Wow.
With every superintendent in all regions of the state and getting a lot of the same kinds of questions and looking for opportunities to provide clarification. But number one, I always like to emphasize that the LEARNS Act and our role as an agency and our priorities is about supporting the neighborhood public schools. When the neighborhood public schools are thriving and accelerating, then communities win. There's values in students that are from their neighborhood going to school with their friends. A lot of times you have generations of families attending the same school, and parents and administrators and teachers know those families and know how to best support them. But the reality is a one-size-fits-all approach doesn't work for every student and every family, and parents deserve choice options these days. And if the neighborhood public school isn't the best fit for their child and there's other opportunities that their children can be better served, we want to make sure there's choice opportunities. And the last thing we want is choice just to have choice. We want quality choice programs, whether that's supporting parents who choose to homeschool their children or supporting parents who choose to exercise choice in the public school setting or even virtual options today are a good fit for some families or even attending a private school. We want to make sure that when parents are exercising those choice options that there's value in those choice and that schools that choose to participate in scholarship programs are held accountable and are going to be responsible for making sure they provide a quality education for the children whose parents enroll them there.
All right, so the biggest question mark that I've heard from administrators at private schools are, if we take the money from the state, how much control will you have over our school?
Well, that's a great question, and I think the last thing that we want to do is to impede on a private school whose vision and mission is set up for a purpose that that they came together collectively to say this is what we value. We don't want to intrude on that, but we also want to make sure that students are learning and that they participate in a national standardized assessment so that we can monitor outcomes of the student's performance. So we're engaging in what's called the rulemaking process. Now that the bill is signed into the law, we work with our State Board of Education to define just what those parameters are. What does accountability look like? The last thing we're going to do is let a group of bad actors set up a fake private school in their shed and start trying to take taxpayer money. That's not going to happen. We got to put some guardrails up to make sure that private schools are accredited. And many of the private schools follow an accreditation process now. Their students participate in a standardized assessment now. And if they can meet those conditions, then we want to be able to support and honor the traditions and values that those private schools hold. But we got to put guardrails around this too. Unfortunately, there are bad actors out there, and if we find people are trying to exploit the system, we're gonna come after them full force and hold them accountable.
Hey, Secretary Steve McCabin, looking at the private schools that are in place now, I'm trying to see what the incentive for them is to get on board with this, because they became created to keep from being out from under these states' regulations. And with what's in place on this, with not just the accreditations, but the auditing, the procurement law provisions, and some others, what's the incentive for them to get involved with this?
Well, it provides an opportunity for their families to participate in the educational freedom accounts, which may be a little bit of a benefit for the families choosing to exercise that option. But it's important to note that there's nothing forcing any private school to participate. That's a choice that they're going to have to make. I want to say right now, statewide, there's probably about 30 to 40 private schools currently participating in the State Succeed Scholarship. And I think those institutions will tell you that it's been a good relationship. It's going to be a good fit for their families and a good option for their school. I anticipate many of the private schools currently that participate in the Succeed Scholarship will transition to the Education Freedom Accounts as well, and that the qualifications to participate will be pretty similar in nature, and that they would tell you that it's not overreach or overburdensome, because that is not our goal.
All right. I got one last question for you. I told you I'd keep you to 15 after, and we're right at that point. And that is, what about things like prayer in school and things of that nature? That's what parents are worried about, that the state's going to come up with things that say, you got to take this out, you got to take that out. That's not on the table, correct?
Not for the private schools. This is about making sure that they're accredited, that they're a legitimate organization, that they have their own bylaws, that they're responsible with their finances, and that they have a method for receiving applications and payments, but then also reporting a national standardized metric so that we can ensure that students are learning and be able to report on that. And we're not looking to change the reason, the values of why the private schools start. We want to support them and make sure that those choice programs are of quality. And I think if anybody feels like that we're being overburdensome, I'd be surprised, because that's been kind of made pretty clear to us. Even Governor Sanders has signed some executive orders that's asked us to look at bureaucracy and red tape and government getting in the way of common sense, and that's not what our intention is.
All right. We appreciate your time today. By the way, this group that's trying to get the signatures to get rid of the LEARNS Act, I'm telling my listeners, just don't sign it, because this is bad apples that we're hearing from that side.
Well, I think at the end of the day, we all have the same goal. We want to see student outcomes and performance increase. When you look at the past 20 years of education in Arkansas, to be ranked in the mid-40s, it's not good enough. And we know we can do better. And Governor Sanders and the legislature put forth a bold initiative to say we're going to do better. And if people are fighting to keep a broken system, that's very disheartening.
Thanks so much for your time. I'll let you get on with your day.
We appreciate you. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye now. That's the Secretary of Education from Arkansas, Olivia. He's a good damn man, I'm telling you.
He's got good ideas.
And he's able, I think he does a good job of explaining things.
Yeah, I think he's doing a good job, and I like the guy, and his commitment seems sound. I will say this, though, that with the provisions, let's go back to what Representative Carlton Wing told you and I at the beginning of the session at the state capitol when this came up about school choice. And he told us that only of the other states that have these programs or similar programs, only 3% of students and families have left the public school system. Now, I think there's some reasons for that. And one is, if you have these provisions that for private schools to participate in this, that they're going to have to come under some regulations from the state. and they're subject to upcoming rules decided on by the State Board of Education, and those private schools have said, hey, we're not doing that. And so it limits, when we say school choice, okay, it limits that in the sense that, yes, you're going to give parents a voucher to use at private schools, but if the private school doesn't want to accept those guidelines from the state, then the parents are kind of out of luck on that.
All right, let's get to the 9 o'clock hour here. We're going to bring in one of, full disclosure now, politician I'm going to have on for the next half hour. It's a personal friend of mine. He has filled in for my show. I've had him on my show to be a co-host on the Dave Elswick show. And if you don't know what he stands for, it's because you didn't listen to my show. I'm going to be honest with you. He has talked about it constantly. And that's Ken Yang. Ken Yang is putting his hat in the ring. He's running for office. Last time you ran was what, for the you wanted to be the what now?
Yeah, it was for a state auditor.
Yeah, state auditor.
Yeah, and it was ten years ago. You know, time flies.
Yeah, when you're having fun, it does, doesn't it? Well, Ken, I got to ask. I wasn't surprised that I heard that you were going to throw your hat in the ring, but I wanted to have you on because I want you to talk to my listeners about why you are throwing your hat into the ring, because, you know, they're going to put a target on you again. You already have people put target on you left and right because you're a conservative. So go ahead, explain.
Yeah, I think, you know, opportunities like this happen probably once every 10 years to run for the legislature. And, you know, when Lanny decided that he was retiring, I got a lot of calls, you know, and your listeners know I've been behind the scenes helping really good people get elected, really good conservatives like John Payton, Matt McKee, Mary Bentley, you know, Tony Furman, those types of folks that are just really good conservatives. And I was really encouraged and prayed a lot. I mean, my goodness, I tell folks that, you know, I believe that, you know, the Holy Spirit really leads us to do things even when we don't want to do it, or when we do want to do it, he tells us not to do it. And I was really led to do this because, you know, it's one thing to be behind the scenes fighting. It's another thing to, you know, put your name out there and fight. And I thought it was time for me to, after 10 years of being behind the scenes, to put my name in the ring and fight with all this nonsense that's happening, whether it's nonsense from the left, all the woke Biden policies, whether it's just nonsense from the right, where it's the people that purport themselves to be Republican that refuse to stand up against these woke policies.
All right, that's a great way of leading into this interview. You've got to be happy with our new governor.
Oh, best session, I think, in the history of our state. Mm-hmm. I told the governor that not too long ago, but I also said that please don't share that with your dad, you know, jokingly.
I'm going to have her dad on tomorrow on my show.
Well, I think he's super proud of his daughter, as he should be. And I was just joking with the governor. I was like, and I meant it. I meant it was the best session, I think, in the history of our state. You know, criminal justice reform, school choice, even lowering our income tax even more, and then, you know, fighting a lot of that woke LGBTQ agenda.
Yeah, I agree. So why don't you talk to my listeners, tell them what are your personal areas that you want to attack, because now you get into the arena. Now you're going to be the one that gets in and uses your sweat and your blood, as you know, as a way of putting it, in the arena to fight for the ability to get to the state house.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of things. One of the first things that come to mind that really, I think, encouraged me to run is, you know, towards the end of the session, I saw that they were debating the end of affirmative action. And I was sitting at my office watching, thinking, you know, wouldn't it be great if I was in the legislature, I could speak on this? Because, you know, the left wants to use race and the color of their skin all the time. And I said, wouldn't it be great to be a Republican and be there to tell them that, you know, look, in case you didn't know, you know, I'm a first generation immigrant from Taiwan. My family fled communist China. And guess what? We don't get to participate in affirmative action in America. You know, and so that really bothered me that we still have it. And then, you know, we got to lower our taxes. I mean, we've done a good job of going from blink when BB was still governor. We were still at 7% at the top rate of our income tax. We're now at 4.7. And we got to get that to zero. We got to get rid of the used car sales tax. We got to lower our property taxes. We got to start going across the state and getting rid of these regressive AMP taxes and putting more money into people's pockets. And I think thirdly is, who knows what idiotic, crazy thing this Biden administration is going to continue to do. And we got to continue to be ready to fight them. I think we were above the curve when we passed the, you know, Protect Women's Sports Act. I was very involved in that, making sure biological males don't play sports with biological females. But who knows what else they'll come down with when we have to protect our children and then make sure that we protect parental rights when it comes to kids in public and private schools.
Hey, Ken, it's Jimmy Cavan. One of the things that I was reading about you that I think sets you apart is, interesting, the used car sales tax, which, if I'm correct, I believe back in my day it was Bill Clinton that got that going.
Yep.
But
yes.
What I'd like to hear from you is explain to the people what a detriment and a hardship that is on the middle class and especially lower income citizens of Arkansas is.
First of all, I think that law is unconstitutional because you can't tax things twice. Clinton did that back in the 90s, and you know, we just haven't had the the spine to get rid of it. You know, we've increased the threshold when the used car sales tax goes into effect. But you think of the middle class, where, you know, me or lower middle class and others like that, and you're on a set fixed income, and you need a good car. And, you know, typically a good car, you know, is over $5,000. You need a good car, and you finally, let's say, $10,000. You finally found a car that's $10,000. You're able to put a down payment. You're able to buy it. But you're on a fixed income, and then, boom, here comes a 3% tax. Boom, here comes your first month's payment. Boom, here comes your first month of car insurance. And that tax that shouldn't happen could go towards that first month of car insurance, could go towards that first month of car payment. It's hard. It's hard for people to do that, and it just flat out shouldn't exist. We shouldn't be taxing things twice at all. And I'm glad I've been able to work on that, and make it lower. But you know, we had a great bill two years ago, but unfortunately, you know, Governor Hutchinson, surprise, surprise, you know, ruined it.
Yeah, what do you think about Governor Hutchinson, former Governor Hutchinson, running for president?
I always knew that would probably happen. Look, we live in the greatest country in the world, and people can go run for whatever they want to run for.
Mm-hmm.
So if they want to run to get their 2%, that's what's great about this country, you know. So I don't have a problem with people wanting to run and getting their 2%. That's their prerogative. But he's not, you know, he's not my choice for president of the United States.
Ken Yang is running for what, District 83? Is that correct, Ken?
Yes, District 83. It's north part of Benton, and has Salem, Crows, and goes all the way to the Saline County side of Hot Springs Village.
All right, we'll come back. We'll talk further with Ken in just a moment. I got him for the half hour. Again, full disclosure, Ken's a friend of mine. I hope he wins this race. I really do. He'll be a great addition to the House over in Little Rock. Let me remind you what my buddy from ICU Protection wants you to know about, and that's ERC. Now, what is ERC? That's Employee Retention Credit. That means you can get up to $26,000 per W-2 employee if you're a small businessman or woman. It's a refundable tax credit. It's not a loan. You don't have to pay it back, and there's no strings attached on the funds. Some of the new things about it, and maybe you put in for ERC when it first came out and you were turned down, the qualifications now have changed, and you'll probably be okayed for it. There's supply chain issues that may qualify you now about ERC, and you can both get ERC and PPP, additional ERC funds in some cases. With that all in mind, to get the final word on this, go to this website, ERC Easy. That's the letter E, the letter R, the letter C, the letter E, the letter Z, and then 123.com, and every question that you have will be answered. Find out if you're missing out on the employee retention credit. All right, let's get back to it. We're talking Ken Yang. He's running in District 83. I know it's crazy. Everybody says, you're already talking about 2024, Dave? Yeah, people got to make their minds up by November if they're going to run or not. You got to put your money up or shut up, right? Isn't that how it worked, Ken?
That's right. We start real early this go around, but it's not real early because filings in November. People forget the primaries in March and not in May because it's a presidential year, because Arkansas kind of wants to participate in that presidential discussion.
Right.
So our law staggers in the sense that in a presidential year, our primaries in March, non-presidential primaries in May. And, we announced early just because, you know, Lanny decided he wasn't going to run. And we have a lot of support behind us. We get a lot of local officials ready to endorse us here in the next coming days. And I'm excited about it and just honestly humbled and blessed that all these elected officials are ready to jump on board our team.
All right, well, let's talk about what happened in the last session. I was very proud of the Republican Party for what they did. I was disappointed they didn't get rid of affirmative action, because affirmative action is just fighting discrimination with discrimination, and you can't just continue to discriminate. But let's talk about things that were passed. I had Secretary of Education Oliva on this morning talking about the LEARNS Act. How do you like the LEARNS Act?
I think it's great. I think, Republicans are often criticized for being the party of no but not having a plan. Well, you know what? That was not the case here in Arkansas. The Democrats, the liberals, and the left always just wanted more money when it came to education. There was no plan. You know, the only plan they ever came up with was the terrible Common Core. And that wasn't even really a plan. And so, you know, how do we improve education? Well, we got, you know, do this, do that. And then we finally have the LEARNS Act. Then they come and complain about, well, it doesn't do this, it doesn't do that. It was like, well, it's too late. Y'all had 130-plus years to come up with a plan to fix education in the state of Arkansas, and y'all have failed. And so the Republicans come in with the LEARNS Act. and the competition is good. That's why I'm a capitalist. That's why I'm a Republican. And it's going to make schools better. If it doesn't make your school better, then that's kind of on you. And, you know, Attorney General Griffin often says, what if you lived in Benton and there was a better Walmart in Bryant and someone told you, well, you can only shop at the Walmart in Benton? Not that I shop at Walmart, by the way. But you know, you'd be like, well, that's ridiculous. Why can't I go over there to that better store? I got to stay over here at this crappy store. You know, and that's the same thing with our kids in our schools. We want to send our kids to good schools, and then our teachers got raises, amongst other things, you know, banning CRT in school. She did that with executive order on day one. And I think school choice is already working in other states, and I have no doubt it'll work here in the state of Arkansas.
All right. Issue two that I thought was interesting is everybody's saying, hey, crime is a real problem in the state of Arkansas, and so the governor, along with the AG, got together, put their heads together with senators and state reps, and they came up with their criminal justice reform package. You happy with it?
Yeah. You know, I think A.G. Griffin, Governor Sanders, and I think Senator Ben Gilmore kind of led the charge. And I think there could have been more done. I think they were being budget conscious, which is a good thing, looking at the budget and knowing that, you know, we only had X amount of money, but that X amount of money needed to go towards building a new jail, which I think the groundbreaking happened not too long ago, a couple weeks ago, and then also making sure people serve their violent offenders, serve a fuller term, and that our supporting our law enforcement where they're not constantly arresting the same people, where our communities aren't constantly menaced by the same criminals. And putting these people in jail, relieving our county jails, because there's so many state people in our county jails, relieving them, relieving our prosecutors, our local sheriffs, and I think it's just the tip of the iceberg. But there's more work needs to be done, because let's just be honest, building one jail is not going to solve all of our issues. And, you know, I think Texas has done a really good job of privatizing their jails and how well they're run. You know, it's funny how government doesn't seem to run things as well as the private industry, and I think that's something we can look at as we move forward.
Yeah, I find it interesting. I think it's going to be very incrementally helpful, and that is getting all of these criminals out of our county jails and get them over to this new jail that they want to build. I understand it's $400+ million, but we've waited 10-15 years to build a new jail, and we've been trying to kick the can down the road. It's time to quit kicking it, and it's time to stop it and figure out the answer to this.
That's right. It's, you know, it's supposed to be a deterrent, but our criminal justice system can't be a deterrent if you commit a violent crime and you're out on the street in less than a year.
Hey, Ken, I think to your point, talk about how good it was to change some of the penalties, the felony penalties, to take some of the crimes that were, say, Class D felonies and now make them Class Y felonies. And I think we're already seeing the effects on that on the criminals. Does that look like a good deterrent on crime? I think we're already seeing a upside to that.
Yeah, for sure. I work for the prosecutor attorney's office here in Saline County back in my early years for about 5 years. And, you know, what prosecutors have to do with when they ask for sentencing is they got to figure out, you know, what's gross and what's fair. And so by increasing, you know, the level of felonies, you know, you could say, hey, I want the lower end of a Y felony, which is, you know, around the same as the higher end of a D felony or something like that. And then, you know, present something that's reasonable, knowing that they'll serve 70% of that term versus saying, hey, I want the high end, because you're only requesting the high end, knowing that they're only going to serve, you know, 10% of that term. And so, I think moving those things up and making sure they serve a longer sentence, truth in sentencing, is going to just be a way better deterrent. You know, if I had my way when it comes to deterrent, you know, we'd still be making the death penalty public, and people wouldn't be on death row for over 20-something years.
All right, final question. We've got 30 seconds. Ken, where do people go to give some money to your campaign?
Yeah, we're on Facebook. You can just search facebook.com/voteKenYang. That's YANGKENYANG. You can just search Ken Yang. I have a public page, private page. Go on there, donate. We're fundraising right now. There's a link to donate. Go on there and donate. Get the word out. I would appreciate everyone's support, and especially prayers and financial contributions.
All right. Thank you, Ken. We appreciate you. I'll have you on again in the near future. All right. Final hour of a Wednesday show. I haven't even used my typical opening for Wednesday. It's Wednesday. It's hump day. It's middle of the week day. It's over the hill day. We are closer to Friday than we were on Monday. So it's good to have you along with us here on the Dave Elswick Show. Jimmy's here, over sitting in front of the Starship Enterprise. That's Aaron. He keeps things going directly the way they should. We're going to let kind of take his bridle off a little bit, let him join us on the show here in this hour. He played high school sports, and I know he's got questions about NIL. NIL, what is that? That's name, image, likeness. That means a college basketball player can accept money for a company using their image, their name, or their likeness. And some of these kids make a lot of money. The quarterback at Alabama, who just is going to sign a big contract to be a quarterback in the NFL, made about $3.5 million. Well, and I think that was a year. That wasn't even, a career. That was a year,
right,
that they were making. I know that the girl that just won the national championship with her team at LSU.
Oh, she's banking.
Yeah, she bought herself a what?
A Mercedes. And she's going, I'm in no hurry to go to the WNBA because I'm banking money right now.
She got two more years of eligibility, maybe three.
Oh, she makes way more money in college than she will in the WNBA.
Yeah, that's right.
Because their contracts are not, if you make $100,000 as a player, that's good.
All right. With that in mind, Jimmy, why don't you introduce our guest? I know that he's one of the best basketball coaches, or was one of the best. You retired?
I'm retired. My has been washed up now.
So. Okay, retired high school basketball coaches.
Coach Rice spent a career at Northern Little Rock coaching in, was it 2012 or 2011 you took over as head coach at Northern Little Rock?
2012, 13 years, my first year 13, as a head coach.
Yeah, in his first year as a head coach, he went 27-1 and won a state championship. But in 10 years, in the 10-year period that he was a head coach, he won 6 state championships.
That keeps me up at night. So that one runner-up.
You don't have a special hat or anything you wear, do you?
No.
That's pretty impressive, Aaron. 6 state championships in 10 years. That's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, really awesome. That's pretty impressive, Coach.
You should have been calling him. And what position did you play in the basketball, Coach? The basketball court?
Foul?
I mean, yeah.
Was that the position you played was foul?
I was the facilitator. You could just put it at that. So.
Played hockey when you went out there. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Just so we know, he was the enforcer out on the court.
You need those. There's no doubt.
We were talking about recruiting, using NIL to recruit, and we were talking about the portal and how a player gets hired and transfer, and how NIL plays in that recruiting. So go back to where we were talking about that.
Well, I mean, it's not like they. Whatever company or whatever is contacting the player they're going through the university, through their compliance department, making sure everything's on the up and up. And, I mean, the way I understand, I mean, the coach knows how much he has that bucket of money that he – and he can almost distribute it. I know a lot of schools are doing that. They're pulling it all together and then distributing it out certain way. Now, there are certain players that certain companies want to make sure that they're – that one is.
Right.
So your high profile or your quarterbacks, you know, ones that are seen all the time, they're going to for sure draw the most – the biggest amount. But so it's used like that, and when you're in the recruiting process, that you can say, "Hey, I got this." I had a kid, one of my kids. He signed a Division I scholarship, but it was late, and I had one Power Five school, and said, "Coach, he says we can't give him a scholarship, but we can get him NIL money, and I'll pay for his school." Mm-hmm. So it's almost like you say it's a free player, but that player didn't do that, but that was an option that you don't think of. So he says, you know, you can get your school paid for and make money and not even use a university scholarship.
So you're saying, coach goes, "Hey, son, I don't have room for you on a scholarship, but I really want you to come to school. So I can guarantee you through NIL, we can get you the money to pay for your school and have money left over."
That's exactly right.
That's just wild, isn't it?
And it could be a kid that's kind of in between. He's like and he's got certain skills he needs to develop. Like this one was a superior athlete, good, strong. His skills for the position he would play in college were kind of underdeveloped because, say, he's playing out on the floor now, or he would in college, but he's played with his back to the basket in high school till his senior year in high school. And so they see the potential with him, but he's not to where somewhere he would contribute the first couple of years at a Power Five school. He ended up going and signing with it's a Division I school, but not a Power Five school.
All right. Yeah. So how does the portal work? I mean, can a coach actually go out and coach through the go out and talk a player to come in from another school?
Once a kid, you have to enter the NCAA transfer portal, which is like you go online and do it all that. And once they hit the portal, it's open game then.
That's so wild.
Talking about
changing sports. Changes sports there.
No doubt. So, you'll see on different online news deals that, you know, Coach Must is huge in the portal. That's just the lay of the land now, and he's really good at it. But you'll say, well, you'll see this one kid that was at, you see the twins that were at Rhode Island when they came out and said, they were out there and said, "Here's the schools that listen to." You'll see Arkansas's name on every kid that they've contacted. So they're on that, and that's a huge part of it. And once they get in that portal, it's anybody can call them and contact them.
I mean, I've been looking, watching U of A. I'm a big basketball fan.
Yeah.
I'm originally from Indiana.
Yeah.
I mean, that's next to godliness is basketball in Indiana.
Exactly
this would
right.
kill Bobby Knight, by
I'm
the
a
way.
I'm a huge Bobby Knight fan.
But you see all the old ones, like Shesesky got out, Coach Williams, Jay Wright at Villanova.
Is it because they saw this coming?
I ain't going to say that's the reason. I mean, those guys have been there, done it forever. But I think that had a lot to do with it.
Interesting.
They don't like where the game's going.
And if you hadn't got your program established, some of these coaches are tiptoeing, and they don't want to coach them really. If you coach a kid too hard, they're going to get mad and leave.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're not satisfying them and you're not – pat them on the back, or you're not coaching them in the way they think they need to be.
You're not feeding them enough.
They're going to go. So it's, I mean, that's a tough spot to be in, and I think that has a lot of reason why that all those big, the older guys, established dudes have gotten.
Well,
out.
Basically, what you're saying is that college coaches have become like the NFL coaches. I mean,
or the NBA coaches.
I want you to think about this. You're making, let's say, $2.5 million a season. You got a guy that's making $8 million, and you're going to tell him what to do?
Yeah,
you got to finesse that.
No, yeah, there's no doubt, and I think Coach Must is an advantage because he coached in the NBA for so long and different groups, and so he. all that stuff. He's the way he promotes his the program on social media to do all that. That's all part of his NBA.
I think
pedigree.
It's just taking his shirt off. that's what I think. I think it's when he takes his
I
shirt
did.
Off.
I did that one time. But it,
that's legendary.
You
only had to do it one time.
But I did it in the locker room. I didn't do it out there on the floor, and I was told not to ever do that again.
Still legendary.
By my wife, not by anybody else.
Still legendary.
Yeah.
That's funny. And, you got a question, Aaron? I know you're chomping at the bit over there. Go ahead.
I mean, y'all pretty much – asked everything that I was going to ask. I think my big thing with the NIL that could possibly come to Arkansas is the high school aspect of it. I think because I come from a coach's family. My dad's a defensive. He's been a defensive coordinator for 30 years now. And, you know, again, he's old school, so he's not a fan of it at all. You know, but where I'm just kind of questioning it is, you know, if NIL does come to high school sports, I think it's, in my opinion, could hurt some of the smaller rural schools.
Yeah, let me jump in and just say you've heard that there's all kinds of legal maneuvering going on in Texas as far as high school, correct?
I mean, it's become a real deal in Texas. I mean, they've brought it to the UIL down there, and I think they've brought it to the courts, and I think in Texas as well. So they're actually moving forward with it down there, but – My whole thing is, you know, let's, for example, like Dumas, you know, Southeast Arkansas, way down there. They have a player that's headed D1, maybe has offers to Mississippi State, LSU, Ole Miss. Well,
not Arkansas? They're going to let him,
Arkansas,
get, out. Gonna
maybe,
let him get outside the gate?
Maybe Arkansas. You never know. But let's say he's a junior, and then, you know, Warren would like to have him. And, you know, Warren's, what, only 35, 45 minutes away from Dumas. So they send him an NIL deal. How would that work? I mean, there's a whole lot of things that could go into that. I mean, that's where a lot of these people are saying that that's how this would work is, I mean, pretty much where it's going.
So, Coach, are you hearing anything like this?
I mean, I know that it's being discussed. And like I was telling you all at the break that I think there's 25 states now that have approved NIL stuff for high school.
Yeah.
And I don't know what those are, but I mean, if I was guessing it, you're looking at Texas, California, Florida, I mean, all those, you know, the ones that
the big hotbeds.
Yeah, the hotbeds for talent. And, I mean, for NIL to hit high schools, I mean, your state governing bodies, like our activity association, has to be involved in that, and you ask those questions like, you know, Warren could give a NIL deal to a kid in Dumas. Well, I mean, even with the new Learns Act and school choice going to be, we've had school choice forever, but it was like a kid could go to school on school choice anywhere, but to be eligible for athletics or any extracurricular activities, they had to do it before July 1 going into their sophomore year, 10th grade year, and doing all that. So there's still all that. Well, now with the Learns Act, it's taking that away. It's like their eligibility is going to follow the money, wherever the state money goes, wherever they go to school. So that could open up things different. But, you know, there's no way that as a coach, I think they're going to allow you to, like, still a kid coming on choice, I can't go call the kid. Like, if I was at North Florida, I can call the kid at Parkview, even now, and say, hey, come over here. My best point guard left. I need a guard. Come on.
Yeah, we'll plug you in right away.
It's those rules are still in fact that you in place to where you can't contact a kid and do all that. But, I mean, their kids are bolting. They're going all over the place now. It's like, I guess I'm a Coach K or whatever. I'm glad. I mean, I had kids transfer in. I had kids transfer out. So, but that was not a fun part of my job. And now it's rampant.
Well, we got to get a break in. When we come back, I want to talk about families. I mean, look, in college ball, it's not only the kid comes to play college, but maybe the parent ends up being an administrator or something like that. We'll talk about all of this. It's been going on for
You don't know anything about parents getting involved, do you, John?
Well, no. Yeah. Well, maybe a little bit every now and then.
It's good. We're going to talk about it here on the Dave Ellswick Show. Hey, don't forget about East End Towing. You need a tow? You call East End Towing. Like I told you, I've used them a couple of times here in the last few weeks. Had a battery go bad. Had a hose break on my car. It all happened under my wife's watch, so you take that for what it is. But the bottom line, to get it to over to Joe's Garage and get it fixed, I called East End Towing, and they did come out and took care of it, jumped the car, got it started again, saw that the water is pumping out of a hose. They couldn't fix that, so they shut it down, put it on the bed of the truck, and took it over to Joe's on Crystal Hills Road. They'll do the same for you, minus Joe's Garage. I mean, it depends on who your mechanic is. But you give the folks at East End Towing a call at 501-888-8849. 501-888-8849. All right, so back, we're talking about the changes in athletics. And it's coming on the high school level. It's already hitting college-level sports huge now. But it's going to hit high school level, I think, just as big. Here's another point that we haven't talked about. A lot of these kids come from impoverished backgrounds. They don't have a lot of money. I didn't have a lot of money when I went to school. But I got to play baseball, and because I played baseball, I didn't get a full scholarship, didn't get a full ride, got a partial. I paid for my room. I paid for my eating. I had to pay for my books and tuition, things of that nature. But that was a big deal for my daddy, who was a steel worker. Now, I've watched enough college sports, and I've heard enough stories around college sports, that I know that there have been colleges that have gone to the families to recruit, and they're not just recruiting the athlete, they're recruiting the parents. Because, and with NIL, with big money being available for that, what can that mean as far as raising the living standard of a family? And have you been able to see any of that kind of stuff going on?
Well, I mean, I know that's a huge part of it. I mean, that's been in recruiting. I mean, a long time. If you can get mama on board, most of the time that's your first step,
mm-hmm.
in getting a player, and but throw in the financial piece to all that. I mean, that this makes that even.
Yeah, tell daddy you get to be the groundskeeper.
Yeah,
we're gonna pay you $70,000 to be the groundskeeper. Yeah. That's big difference in living standards.
Yeah, and I think corruption isn't anything, okay?
Yep.
And we've seen corruption in all the way down to high school athlete sports for years and years, and in college, right?
Little League.
Yes, exactly. and so with NIL, there's going to be corruption. There's just no way around it. It's, you know, you can try to police it, but you're not going to stop it. So what stops a parent, you know, from, and I don't, this is going to sound harsh, but you've seen stuff, it's almost like some parents have prostituted their children to get forward. And is NIL going to just increase that?
I think there's no way, if it did trickle into high school, there's no way that it couldn't or it wouldn't. Yeah. I mean, because you got a high profile, a talented kid that's in the 8th, 9th grade. There's a lot of cases that those daddies are shopping those kids around, mm-hmm. for the best type of program, the best that's going to put their kid in the best situation, that's playing a schedule that the kid's going to be seen outside of Arkansas and all those things. And kids are very mobile in my years of coaching. I mean, I've only been out a year, but it's now they're that being able to be mobile and change schools is now it's off the charts.
Yeah.
And they were very mobile back then, or a year ago. Now there's hardly any stopping. any of that. So that NIL, yeah, that if that trickled into high school, yeah, that would be a massive part of it. And I don't know how, you know, I said our activity association would have to have a department that just dealt with that, and I don't see that happening anytime in the near future.
Well, they have to understand that they may not have any ifs, ands, or buts about it. Court system might get involved.
What I'll just pick a name, Darren McFadden. Good Lord, how much money could he have made from ninth grade through 12th grade? Him and his family made if NIL was intact.
How much could he have made at the University of Arkansas?
Oh yeah.
It would have been massive.
Massive, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. But from a high school perspective, let's look at it. Let's say we've got a star athlete. And we'll use North Little Rock as a community because North Little Rock is not Little Rock. People confuse that. North Little Rock is its own town with its own identity, and it's very local, and it's like a 70,000 population small town.
Exactly.
And so let's look at the local businesses around there. If they could take one of the star athletes from North Little Rock to promote their insurance agency and pay them.
All right. I'm going to let that sit there in a pregnant pause. Because we got to take a break. And we'll come back and hear what the coach has to say about it. Here on the Dave Ellswick Show, we got news coming up for you. When we come back, more about all of these changes going on in high school sports. That's coming your way on the Dave Ellswick Show. All right, back, Dave Ellswick Show. And we're talking about college sports and how that's going to affect high school sports. And let's turn it back over to Jimmy. Let him ask his question again so that Coach Rice can come up with
Well, we were
the
talking
answer.
About if this trickles down to high school. And then
Not
we,
if.
It's Yeah, I agree with you there. And so we're going to use North Little Rock as an example. So what's to prohibit an insurance agency, a guy owns a shelter, State Farm insurance agency in the community, and he says, hey, I want to use this kid to promote my business. So we're getting in the deal that the school would have to regulate that. But from a perspective of what does that do to teamwork in a sense that we talked about the economic situation
with families.
And so the father says, hey, son, this insurance company, they want to use your picture and you do commercials for them and everything, and it's going to bring money to the family, but we got to score more points to get those deals. So your coach is telling you to pass the ball and we've got this offense, I need you to shoot. Now how is that going to that's going to be an issue it
I mean that aspect has been going on for forever. I mean, just a daddy wanting, you know, his kid to be successful, want to be the, you know, the all-state guy, or you want him to shoot the most shots, run offense that, you know, is suited for him, run set plays to where he's doing that. That's been going on. And, I mean, like I said, my 10 years, I was blessed with the best basketball players there were. And, you know, 99% of them, I hardly had an issue, but I had issues with some of dads wanting me to run sets, their kid at the point guard and this and this and that. And so that's been going on. But you start throwing money into it.
Quick money. Yeah.
I mean, it would just amplify that even more. Yeah. And, I mean, I agree. I think eventually it's going to hit high school. But how it's governed is a scary, scary thing.
Are we killing high school sports with this? Are we killing the reason for high school sports with this?
I don't know if you say killing it. I sure don't see it helping. But it's just to tell the times. I mean, that's just
what did Coach Brown just say here just a few weeks ago? You know, he's in North Carolina now instead of at Texas. Mm-hmm. And he said college athletics are gone. That's what he said. And I think I kind of agree with him. I watched college athletics because I got tired of professional athletics and you know, the players being the, you know, don't be telling me what to do and things of that nature. College players played for the, I thought, at up until just recently, the purity of the sport. That's going away now.
Oh yeah, that you're exactly right. And I mean Coach Brown's an old school. He's one of the old school guys, and he's hanging on. I don't know why, but he kind of
yeah. He's got more money than God.
Yeah. So, but
well, he's got a love for the game.
Yes. Yeah.
And talk about this, Coach, because we're talking about NIL and NIL in college and trickling down to high school, but let's take it to another deal, which I'm not saying NIL would trickle here, but where have we gotten in sports? And Dave and I were talking about it on a recent show, and we're going to use Little League Baseball, for example, because you love baseball.
Oh, yeah. It's big. Little League Baseball. Let me just say this real quick, all right? When did you ever believe that the Little League Baseball World Series would be presented on television the way it is now? And they make these little kids, 9-10-year-old little kids, superstars.
Yeah.
And then they lose. It's bad enough to lose. It's terrible to lose, and you feel like you've let everybody down.
Well, the pressure at that age on young athletes.
Too much.
I played baseball down in Lonoke County for the Butlerville Buzzards. Okay, and we went out there and played. That's true.
That's funny.
But we played because we love to play baseball. But if there'd been so much pressure put on me to where I'm not loving the game, and that's what we were talking about, I want to get your input, because we look at Little League Baseball and we see, my God, how many different tournaments traveling teams go to. And they win a tournament, and they get a gigantic ring like you're wearing for a state championship at 9 years old. At 9 years old, what's left?
Yeah, no, I see that. I said my son Luke plays at Henderson State University, and he's a sophomore there, eligibility. He's a junior in school, but sports had changed. From time I played to him, one of the biggest aspects is I grew up in Rose City, and when the sun came up, I went outside. All my buddies went outside. We went to the ballpark. They couldn't even chalk the fields at the Rose City ballpark till an hour before a game.
Right.
Because we're on the fields playing.
Mm-hmm.
Or at the community center right next door, and we were doing all that. And then nowadays, like now if I wanted my kids to play baseball or I want my kids to play basketball, I've got to set it all up and do it. Because you couldn't just turn them loose and say, hey, go play.
Go to the park.
When the street lights come on, that's the time for you to come home.
Yeah, that's who it was with me.
And that's the way it was with me, too. But there's no, it's not everything now is you gotta plan it yourself and do all that. And then rec Little League Baseball you get 8-9 years old, and then if you want to play where it's halfway competitive, and then when you start saying that, there's where everything changes, and it gets where it gets really pressure packed and do all that
cutthroat.
It is. You get kids play on a team, and then next year they don't want that kid to play. They're going to kick him off and bring some other kid in, and I mean, so sports has completely changed, and that whole travel baseball. I did it, but. I would have parents ask me, what should I do with my kid if he's a basketball player or a baseball player? You know, what I need to do for him to give him the best opportunity? I says, first thing you got to do is once they fall in love with the game, if it's baseball, if it's basketball, if it's golf or whatever.
Fast pitch softball
is the same way. Once they fall in love with the game, you can do anything with them.
Mm-hmm.
But then,
how do we keep them in love with the game? Let's don't make them fall out of love.
Oh, yeah.
That's a problem right now, though, isn't it?
It's a huge, huge issue. You're exactly right. Kids can get burned out really, really quick because they're playing. I mean, I would play a game on a Tuesday and a Thursday or something. And if we played on a weekend, it was All-Stars or something like that.
Yeah.
And then now it's every Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You can start playing in February.
I'm not telling you how important sports are, all right? I went back to Chicago 2 weekends ago to go see the Cubs play. I'm a huge Cub fan. And my son-in-law wanted to see where I grew up at, because he had heard that I grew up on the wrong side of the tracks, which I did. And I took him by and showed him the house I grew up in. My house that I grew up in was as big as my living room and dining room at the house I own now. And I took him by the 3A Little League Park, Caldwell Park, because I wanted him to see where I played, you know, high-end Little League. That's how much baseball meant to me when I was a kid. I wanted him to see where I played when I was a kid, because it was such an outstanding ballpark. Stands all the way around. You know, they kept the balls and strikes on the electronic scoreboard. That was big deal back in 1965.
Yeah. Well, and see, your love for the game shows you're 70 years old, and your love for the game
I
from your childhood.
I still love it.
Right. I tell people all the time, I'm 61, and I still have dreams. I still have dreams about where I played football, okay? And I don't know that today's kids are going to get those dreams when they're older. I don't know that today's kids are going to have the same love that we had. Mm. I think and I bet you're going to feel the same way, Coach. The funnest baseball games I ever played, and the funnest basketball games I ever played, and the funnest tackle football games I've ever played were pickup games.
Oh, there's no doubt. Like I said, we had a baseball game at the park. If they couldn't get on them there, they would have had a big field right by mine. We'd be playing there. We'd have football games there.
Sandlot.
Sandlot. I had a basketball goal on my roof in a long driveway. And that, I mean, we were just – my fondest memories are the same way. It's just a pickup game.
Are we robbing kids of that, though?
I think – I don't know if it's on purpose, but it's just you're not going to turn a kid loose and say, when they get up, they're getting out. My mom and dad wanted me a house. They didn't want me sitting around in the house.
That's right.
And but nowadays you can't do that.
Now, I'll tell you what my father always said. When baseball season was over, time to play football, son.
Yeah.
He'd take me out, we'd start throwing the football. When that was over, get out the round ball, start beating it on the driveway, and play basketball. I played three sports when I was in high school. I don't know how many kids do that now.
No. I mean, that's another whole issue on
thing of the past.
Kids specializing. I had a few that were really, really good, but it took a special kid nowadays. This is just high school, because it's a year-round deal. It's not just during the months
that's
of school.
Exactly right. You're expected to play all the time.
Yeah.
And so that's another whole issue, but you probably have to have me on another time to get into that.
Hey, look, I can tell you this much. I never carried a bag with me to practice. I never had a baseball bat that was attached to it, nor mitt stuffed in it, nor a uniform stuffed inside of it. All the other paraphernalia the kids have now. I had a mitt. It was on the end of my ball bat over my shoulder and probably my spikes. Mm-hmm. That's what I had, and that's all you needed at that time. You didn't need to spend hundreds upon hundreds of dollars to play a sport. We'll talk more. This is a great conversation. It really is. And I know there's a lot of guys, a lot of women even, because there's a lot of women now that talk to their daughters about playing fast pitch or gymnastics or whatever. That's what Title IX did. And, of course, we know there's people that are trying to take that away from, you know, female athletes. And I get mad about it, because I watched when I was 71, when I graduated, I knew several girls that would have been great in basketball and whatever. You know what they got to play? They got to play powder puff.
Yeah.
Everybody remember that? That's when the seniors played the juniors in flag football.
Oh, yeah.
Well, these girls didn't want to play flag football. They wanted to play full-court basketball, which they couldn't play.
Half-court basketball.
It's crazy.
No way girls could have the stamina to run up and down the court, right? I mean, because they were – I mean, how ridiculous
And I'm
was
just going to tell you, no namby-pamby boy that can't make a boys' team and win play on a females' team – because they got the build of a male. All right, got to get a break in. You get me going on that. I won't get off my soapbox. Pat Davis, your health plan man, has a powerful team of people that can help you with your health insurance. And why don't you let him help you with your private health plan that pays you to go to the doctor and is available all year round? You're not going to have to pay a copay. You're not going to pay money up front that you got to pay before you can even use your insurance. You get to use the insurance from the very beginning. And Pat tells you, if you call him, he'll save you 30 to 50% off your health insurance right at the bat. When you look at the price of that, that's probably somewhere around, oh, I would think, let's just say $750 a month. Multiply that by 12. That's over, well over $1,000. It's going to save you a lot of money over the course of the year. Call or text him now. Ask him about how much he can save you and how great the health plans that are available. 501-605-6935. That's 501-605-6935. Or just go on the website, yourhealthplanman.com. Back with you. It's Dave Elswick Show. Is this Mary, did you said, that's joining us? Mary, how are you? Welcome to the Dave Elswick Show.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
Well, I thought that I would call in and tell you what happened. All three of my boys played sports,
okay,
you know, from when they were little. And I didn't force them into anything. But then, you know, my boys had their boys into sports. And one of my grandsons had a full-ride scholarship. I'm not going to tell you where and who he is, but he had a full-ride scholarship to be a quarterback to play football. And he had been a quarterback, and he'd been playing football since he was 8 years old. And he called me one evening and said, "Grandma, I need to talk to you about something important." And I said, "Okay." And, you know, I asked him a couple of other questions, which I won't put on the air, but I said, "Why don't you want to play football anymore?" He says, "Grandma, it's just not any fun anymore. It's just not fun."
It's a job, right?
Yeah, it's a full-time job. He said, "I don't have time to spend with my friends. I can't visit, you know, Mom and Dad. I can't see you." No, it's a full-time job. And the thing is he's not getting paid for it in one respect, but he's getting a full-ride scholarship for another.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he let the scholarship go, and now he and his, you know, Mom and Dad are paying for school, but he's graduating this next year. So
good for him.
It was tough. It was tough. He had no time.
How did his parents react when he said, "I don't want to play anymore"?
Well, they actually said that he needed to make that decision on his own.
Good for them.
He was the one that was going to have to live with it.
Yeah, good for them.
And I mean, my son paid for him to have all of the special coaching and everything with some of the professionals, and he went to all the camps, and yeah, and it just, it's not fun anymore. When it was fun, he played it hard out.
I got you. All right, well, let us talk a little bit about that. We got a few moments left. We appreciate you calling in and sharing that story with us here on the Dave Elswick Show. Coach, do you hear that story very often?
I've gone and spoke at, you know, some athletic banquets or some other kind of is athletic type banquet or venues, and I did a deal on research on why kids play sports, and I was really trying to get the point across of how important sports or extracurricular activities are at schools. And every study I looked at, every survey or whatever, the results of it, the number one reason why kids play sports was it was fun. That was number one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they can play with their friends. It teaches life skills, time management. I mean, it had all those things, but every one of them, the number one answer for kids was, "Why do you play sports?" And because it's fun. And then, so you hear that story, and I see it all the time. And especially seeing college kids now that it's not as fun, but they're getting paid or they're getting their school paid for.
Right.
And I deal that with my own household. You know, my boys, if I like it as much. So, son, it's helping pay for most of your school.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the one aspect to look at it. You can't play forever. And
that's for sure.
That sport.
Yeah.
And so But I see that all the time.
And that statement, you say you can't play forever, will not have any push on a person until they can't play it again.
How many?
You're exactly right.
Let's think about this. We think about especially young men playing sports, okay, but they're not having fun. And they want to tell their dad that. They want to tell their dad
that's tough.
Well, I likened this. I said, you know, a kid, think about that. The kid might as well come in and tell the dad, hey, I'm gay. I mean, that's...
In some cases, that's true.
But that's the type of... I mean, that's a hard thing.
Some cases, it's worse.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's even true. And, I mean, that's a reality for some of these young people.
No, there's no doubt. And, you know, that's just... I mean, that's today's society. And, I mean, I always knew... I learned really quick coaching is that, you know, I would coach a kid to do something and I would talk to the dad and he'd go, you know, I told my son the same thing and they listened to you.
Mm.
Well, then I've had my own boys that I would say something and then they wouldn't listen, but the coach said it and then...
Well, as a dad, you're an idiot.
You're an idiot, exactly.
Yeah. So, those commercials, TV, Dan.
Yeah.
I love those spots. Yes. I really do. You know, you can say it all you want, but it don't mean the same thing as TV, Dad.
Yeah.
All right. Coach, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you all for having me.
I want you to come back on. We might do this once a month.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun.
Sports are huge.
Yeah, cuss and discuss, right?
Yeah.
Cuss and discuss.
You know, I mean, we're talking bread and circuses here in American style. All right. I'll be back tomorrow at 7 a.m. Don't be late because you don't want to miss anything on the Dave Elswick Show. Have a great afternoon.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.